Large.
Together, we can forge a new beginning for America.
I want to make sure every American is listening today.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
When Lars talks, he talks for me. Our president lies.
Broadcasting to the entire country from the left coast of America.
If there's someone with a grenade launcher outside the Capitol today, I want him shot in the head.
Now, honestly provocative talk with Lars Larson.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Friday night in the quick poll, we said, should President-elect Trump break his promise by not investigating Hillary Clinton? Actually, that was what we asked you right before Thanksgiving. I did want to say happy Thanksgiving to all of you, and I hope you had a wonderful holiday weekend with your family and friends, and I'm looking forward to Christmas. Not the winter holidays, but Christmas. Good to have you with me today. There are some terrible things that have happened, most especially in Columbus, Ohio, on the campus of Ohio State University, where it now appears that there was a terrorist attack. And we're going to watch this weird kabuki dance that seems to happen every time in America, where there's a terrorist attack. It's carried out by an Islamic radical terrorist. In this case, he used a car and a big knife to hurt people, and thank God did not take anybody's life, although two people are said to be in critical condition. But we get to watch this weird dance where the mainstream media works overtime to try to say, well, for example, CNN right now is saying terrorism a possible motive in the Ohio State campus attack. And Fox is saying similar things. Because a young man, 18 years of age, apparently a very good student, he had already graduated from community college, according to the New York Times. He has a Muslim name. He had complained to the campus newspaper about the lack of Muslim prayer facilities at Ohio State University. And then, for some reason that they're still trying to intuit over at the Chicken Noodle News Network, he took a vehicle, rammed it into a crowd of people, injured a great many of them, and then jumped out of the car and began slashing with a butcher knife. Yes, if that rings a bell for you, it's exactly the kind of attack that has been carried out so many times by occupants of the West Bank who've come into Israel proper and begun either running people over with a car or slashing them with a knife or both. And they're saying possible terrorist motive. And of course, President Barack Obama hasn't had a single thing to say about any of it. But we will be getting more information as the evening proceeds, and we'll let you know as we know it. Our quick poll tonight. And this has to do with retaliation that's being carried out toward the family of Donald Trump. You see, Ivanka Trump, who's been a guest on this program, has a clothing line. In fact, it's a very nice clothing line. We made mention of it during the Republican National Convention because Ivanka Trump, who got up to give one of the convention speeches, she was not wearing the $12,000 outfit that Hillary Clinton would have worn. She's not wearing the $1,000 outfits that some other, you know, top-level politicians or their wives would wear, or in this case, the daughter of the president-elect. No, she was wearing a $270 dress that came from her own clothing line because she is every bit the capitalist that her father is a capitalist. So she has a clothing line. It's apparently very popular. Two of America's major department stores, Macy's and Nordstrom, had entirely different reactions to Ivanka Trump and the election of President-elect Donald J. Trump. Macy's decided to drop the entire line of clothing. They were being badgered by activists who said, "Don't sell her clothing. We don't like her dad." That was the essence of the message. Don't sell Ivanka Trump's clothing. We don't like her father. Well, there are an awful lot of Americans who do like the clothing line. And to their credit, Nordstrom did the exact opposite of what Macy's had done. Nordstrom said, the clothing sells. Some of our customers like it. They buy it. Some of our customers don't like it. They don't have to buy it. Nobody's putting a gun to their heads. The wise Swedes who run the Nordstrom Corporation said, we're going to keep on selling it because our customers like to buy it. So I thought I'd ask you in tonight's quick poll, was Nordstrom right to keep the Ivanka Trump clothing line when Macy's dropped it? My answer would be, yes, they were right to keep the clothing line from Ivanka Trump. And if you think, well, Lars, that seems like a very very small kind of issue. It is not a small issue at all. I think you're going to see over the next 8 years during the Trump administration, and probably the next 8 years, you know, all the way out to another couple of presidential terms during the Mike Pence administration, I think you're going to see an awful lot of economic attacks on people because of their politics. I certainly know I've had some economic attacks on me because of my politics. And usually these attacks come from the folks who love to tell you about their tolerance for different points of view and different cultures. Yeah, they practice tolerance. They'll let you have any kind of personal beliefs you want as long as they're the same personal beliefs that those folks have. That's the kind of tolerance we're talking about from America's left. Now, there's a third big issue going on tonight, and you're welcome to comment on that as well. Is Jill Stein calling for a recount to ensure voting integrity, or is she simply lining her own pockets with campaign donations? She has already raised, this is Jill Stein, more than $6 million for a recount effort that likely will accomplish nothing. And I'll give you the numbers on why it's not going to change anything. Michigan, the state of Michigan, just a couple of hours ago, finally certified its vote and has established that Donald Trump gets all 16 Electoral College votes from the state of Michigan. The cowardly attacker in today's Ohio State University stabbing and vehicle assault had criticized the school for not providing prayer rooms for Muslim students. Do you think it's the job of a taxpayer-funded institution like a state university to provide special prayer facilities for people of one particular faith? I don't. I don't think it's the government's job. Will a Trump presidency result in a doubling of economic growth? A large organization has revised its economic forecast with some very promising numbers. And should President-elect Trump call for FBI Director James Comey's resignation? I'll talk to Juan Williams from Fox News about that. And, of course, your phone calls and your emails are welcome at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk at LarsLarson.com. Now, about that recount, let me give you a couple of quick pieces of analysis about why the recount is not going to make a darn bit of difference, despite all the millions that Jill Stein will get in her campaign coffers. When you look at examples, you see Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania are not close at all, nor are they likely to change without some massive cheating. Two specific examples. In Washington state, a statewide hand recount 12 years ago. And these hand recounts don't happen very often. Out of 2.8 million votes cast, made a difference after the third count of a total of 400 votes. That's it. In Wisconsin, one of the states they're proposing to recount, a statewide recount 5 years ago, out of 1.5 million votes cast, brought about a total change in the final count of 300. And yet, Donald Trump won Michigan by 10,000. He won Pennsylvania by 70,000. He won Wisconsin by more than 27,000. None of this is going to make any difference whatsoever to the final result, but the liberals love it because it's another way to attack President-elect Trump. You know, hundreds of fake retail apps have been popping up in the online app store posing as well-known brands. Those apps try to get you to enter your credit card info and gain access to sensitive data like your birth date and your address. I'll tell you what, identity theft is America's fastest growing crime. It happens when the thieves use your info to pretend that they're you. They can buy things on your credit, liquidate your bank account, even get your retirement funds. LifeLock scans hundreds of millions of transactions each and every second. That's why I got LifeLock for my family about 10 years ago. If they detect your information, they send you an alert. If you have a problem, a U.S.-based agent works to fix it. That's different than free credit monitoring. That only alerts you to changes in your credit. Nobody's going to prevent all identity theft. Nobody's going to monitor every transaction at every business. But LifeLock is the best identity theft protection available. Join right now for a special 15% discount. Go to LifeLock.com or call 800-417-4206. Use Larson15 to save 15%. And act now. The offer ends December 31st. 800-417-4206, 800-417-4206, and remember, Larson15.
home to honestly provocative talk, The Lars Larson Show. They call him Comrade One because it's cool. A contributing writer for Fox News, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Post, The New York Times, and a hardcore Democrat. He is Juan Williams on The Lars Larson Show.
Oh, you wouldn't realize how much hate mail I get from people because I have my friend Juan Williams on the air about once a week. But that's okay. I stand up for you, Juan. I say, Juan is... He's just a liberal. You have to cut him some slack. He can't help himself. How are you?
This is unbelievable. You mean that you, Lars Larson, a true red conservative,
yes,
actually value diversity of thought, and some of your listeners don't?
I do. I like diversity of thought.
Well,
I
would agree. I think you do. Yeah.
Well, hey, by the way, before we get into talking about James Comey and Donald Trump and just exactly how hard Donald Trump should kick Comey out the door of the FBI— I have a feeling you and I probably agree on the demise of Fidel.
I certainly do. You know, I mean, I don't celebrate any man's death. I think life is to be honored and celebrated in any form. But I think that he was an oppressor, and I just can't believe how the left in this country for decades has celebrated. I'm talking about not just people like today, like, you know, you have some people like the Bob Dylans of the world and the like. But, I mean, going back, you had Ernest Hemingway. You know, even the Pope, remember, was it Pope John Paul II who went over there and was saying nice? I thought this guy, not only in terms of our business, Lars, was he opposed to press freedoms.
Yep.
You and I would have been in jail and gone, if not killed, a long time ago. But think about the freedoms, the economic freedoms, and the economic consequences it had for the Cuban economy. Terrible. He broke that economy.
Yeah, he also is responsible for the deaths of people, for locking people up in prison, for taking away civil rights. And I just don't understand why, for instance, the president in his statement, was he so soft-pedaled any of that. He didn't use the occasion to say, well, you know, this is a man who has been terrible for a lot of people, you know, most of the Cuban people and the people who tried to escape, and some of them died trying to escape.
Well, I agree with you. For me, you just have to be honest about it. I can understand being respectful of the Cuban nation, and for lots of people, he is the father figure, you know, of modern Cuba. Okay, but at some point, I think all of us just need to be called to account for our behavior, and his behavior, not only was it ruinous in Cuba, in my opinion, Lars, he then exported people like Hugo Chavez are basically little Fidels, if you
satellite Fidels, yeah.
Yeah, who ruin their own country and, again, ruin the economy. It just look at Venezuela today.
So I imagine you'd be willing to get on board President-elect Trump's plan to say to the Cubans, you can either give us some concessions on human rights and change the treatment of your people to Raul Castro, or you can forget about the deal that Obama put in place. What do you think of that?
I'm not sure, because it appeals to me in terms of my gut. You know how I feel. I'm just so anti-Castro.
I know.
But the question is, you know, for 50 years we've had embargoes and sanctions, and it didn't change much. So if we go back to that, with Raul Castro promising to step down in 2018, are we putting ourselves back in a box? I don't know. I would like to see change. In other words, my bottom line is I'd like to see more political freedom. I'd like to see democracy. I'd like to see economic freedom. Give those people an opportunity. That's what I'd like to see.
Yeah, I'd like to see that as well. Hey, by the way, how long do you think the major networks are going to do this song and dance about the possible terrorist motives of the man who carried out the attack? Thank God he didn't kill anybody, but he did some terrible damage to people at Ohio State University.
And they're all hurt people.
Well, I mean, this is a guy who had complained about the treatment of Muslims on campus and this and that and the other thing. And he rams a car into a bunch of people. Same kind of attack that's been used so many times in Israel in the last year. And then starts slashing people with a knife, ditto to the comments about Israel. And it seems as though the folks in the media, and Fox is not immune from this, do this little dance where they say, well, man, it could have been terrorism. Could have been he was unhappy with the course selection he got this fall.
Well, I just got off the five, Lars, and on the five, all my colleagues pointed towards terrorism. I was the lone voice saying, well, I don't know, but I'm interested because, you know, over the weekend we had a terrible shooting down in New Orleans. A few weeks ago we had a bad shooting up in your upper northwest part of the country, and there's no terrorism there, but it's just mass murder. And the question is it because this kid's a Somali? And the answer is absolutely. That's why we've all got our antenna out to say, is this some kind of terror-inspired motive? And was it that he was self-trained in terms of terror? We don't know. But we do know that use of a car was recently advised by the terrorist in online messages. So, you know, it looks to me like they're leaning, the facts lean in your direction.
Kind of gives you pause about all those Muslim immigrants that Hillary was planning to bring in, that Obama has been bringing in.
Now you're going overboard.
Why?
First of all, this guy was a legal permanent resident. He's no recent refugee, okay? He's 18 years old and a kid. And the second thing is, we've only accepted so far like 10,000 of the Syrian refugees, which is, and most of them, by the way, women and children. I think it's like 90% women and children. So the question then becomes, is America no longer a nation with a heart? And I hope we never become,
well,
that never becomes the truth.
Look, after World War II, we were a nation with a heart for Poles and Czechs and Germans and, you know, people from all over. How much of a heart should we have shown towards, say, people who were connected to the genocide that went on during World War II? We say, no, well, if we catch them 50 years later, we'll convict them and ship them back. The problem is we can't tell who these people are coming in. We don't know which ones are the dangerous ones. And this kid seemed to have it all. He was 18. He had graduated from the local community college, summa cum laude, and apparently on the dean's list and everything else. So he had his whole world ahead of him, but apparently killing a bunch or trying to kill a bunch of people was apparently higher on his list.
Right. So, again, what you just said, I think, argues that we don't know the whole story yet, because if he had his whole life ahead of him, it just doesn't make sense. Self-radicalized, I don't know. It sounds crazy to me. Maybe he had mental problems. I don't know. But I will say this. My antenna's up just like yours on the terror front. One last historical note.
Yeah.
What we did with the Japanese, I think that was regrettable back in World War II.
Oh, the internment
camps? We certainly didn't admit the Jews when they were fleeing the Nazis, and
that
was a mistake.
That's true. That was a mistake. Although, one last thing. When we find out he was 18, if he was registered to vote, which party do you think he was registered with? One.
Of course he was a Republican. but you know, I hold nothing against him. I hold nothing against him.
Listen, about Comey, is there any reason that Trump should not ask for Comey's resignation?
You know, I love it. You are with me in my heart. I am so upset with Comey, but I'm stunned to realize that Donald Trump is also upset with Comey, and Lars Larson's upset with Comey. So tell me, Lars, why is it that you are with Comrade Juan on the Comey case?
No, you're with me on this because I think Comey's people did a constrained investigation. We've talked to Andy McCarthy and others about this, that all the things they didn't look at, they didn't do a real investigation, or they would have found Huma Abedin's computers a year ago. But they did one where they walked in and had tied their own hands before they did the investigation. And then they said, gee, we didn't find anything worth prosecuting, which was also untrue. I just think Comey has deserved America. We need to send him back to the private sector.
I agree, but I have a different take, which is he intervened in an election.
Oh.
And according to Corey Lewandowski, according to everybody now, for inside the Trump campaign as well as inside the Clinton campaign, he had a tremendous influence on an American political process.
Do you know how he could have avoided that?
And the FBI has no business doing that.
No, do you know how he could have avoided that? If Mrs. Clinton had obeyed the law and given up those documents early on instead of slow-walking it, she slow-walked it right to the edge of the election. That was her choice, not Comey's. This investigation could have been over 2 years ago. But Juan, congratulations, by the way, on We the People, the modern-day figures who've reshaped and affirmed the Founding Fathers' vision of America. I really appreciate that you write some great books. I wish I had the time to do it.
You're kind. Thanks, Lars.
All right, take care now. Juan Williams from Fox News. Coming up in a moment, your phone calls, your emails, and if Donald Trump gives Hillary Clinton a pass, can he really drain the swamp in Washington, D.C.? We'll talk with you, and we'll talk with Colonel Rob Manus. Coming up next, right here on the Lars Larson Show.
The Lars Larson Show.
Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to get your phone calls and your emails. Unfortunately, some of our naysayers have decided to chicken out, but I'm glad to go to, I'll tell you what, we do have a naysayer after all. Roger's on the line. Hey, Roger, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I think we disagree on this whole concept of the election recount.
We do. What, you like it? Why?
I do. Well, I mean, when you think about it, we all agree it's not going to change anything. And in essence, it's going to take those dirty liberal dollars, pump them into creating tax-paying jobs to do the recount, and prevent it from doing a whole lot of harm work to go somewhere else. What's the problem in it?
I don't see the point, though, when you know that it's not going to change the result, number one. And number two, I think it's just simply another way to keep... You realize that for most of us, if you follow politics closely, and I follow politics closely, we know it's not going to change anything. But for the average person, they turn on the TV every night, or they turn on the radio and they get in the car on the way to work in the morning, or they read the paper and they say, oh, gosh, there's still controversy over Donald Trump's election. In other words, it undercuts the legitimacy of the election to some extent with people who say, gosh, why is it that even though he was elected, they're still asking questions about whether or not the vote was counted right? In other words, it calls his presidency into question, which I think is entirely the goal of this.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. But when it's over, they'll be the ones looking stupid. It won't change a thing, and the dollars are their dollars, which they would use to more harm, are wasted.
Well, you may be right about that. I appreciate the phone call. Let's welcome back Colonel Rob Maness, who's a retired Air Force colonel and a man who's been willing to put himself out there on the front lines and run for office. How are you doing, Colonel?
I'm doing great, Lars. I hope you had a good Thanksgiving.
Had a fantastic Thanksgiving. Tell me this, and I hope the same for you and yours. Do you agree with Donald Trump being willing to give Hillary Clinton a pass, at least in that he has said he's not going to go after a special investigation the way he had said he would during one of the debates?
Well, here's what I agree with. I agree that he is going to be the president of the United States, and that once he is already in that position, and this time period leading up to it, it's not his role to make commentary on the justice system or the potential outcomes of any investigations like President Obama was very often want to do, because that's really a violation of our justice system, in my opinion. So what I'm okay with is him letting the justice system work, and I'm very pleased to see that he's nominated Jeff Sessions as the attorney general. Because that tells me that he is going to put one of his closest guys into be the attorney general, and that guy is going to do the right kind of job as opposed to the attorney generals we've had the last few
years. And I'm hoping Jeff Sessions goes after her, because Trump said he was not going to do it, but that doesn't mean that his attorney general wouldn't do it. The only thing I'm concerned with, Colonel, is the appearance that he's giving her a pass. And that I worry about, because I think she's done so much that was so wrong for this country, and she's broken laws, I think, that anybody, even a non-lawyer, can see, that it concerns me if there's even the appearance she's getting a pass on her crimes.
Oh, I share your concern, and Donald Trump's supporters that voted him into office share those concerns, too. I hear about it every day. And as a former commander, I understand the concerns, and I agree that she has broken many, many laws and needs to be brought to justice, just like General Petraeus was. You know, his rank didn't get him out of his crime, and he's paid the price for that. So Hillary Clinton needs to be brought to justice, and I hope that Attorney General Sessions and the justice system will work effectively to get that job done.
Do you think that President Trump, when he becomes the president on the 20th, can actually start draining the swamp in D.C., or is that an empty promise?
Well, he's got to be very, very careful. You know, he's going to have to find a way to appoint a mixture of folks, some people that preside over organizations that he doesn't really necessarily want to change that dramatically. And then he's got to hire a bunch of disruptors that are from outside of Washington, D.C., and he's got to strike the right balance with that. You know, a lot of folks on the outside like me are concerned with appointments like the GOP national chairman to chief of staff, but at the same time, who else would he have appointed if he's trying to build any bridges to the GOP? Reince is the only guy that stayed with him the whole time.
Well, and Reince previous did a pretty respectable job of running the apparatus of the party, and it sounds as though Jared Kushner, his son-in-law, may actually be the de facto chief of staff, but just a little bit more behind the scenes than Priebus.
Yeah, it sounds like that. And I'm comfortable with Priebus being appointed, but a lot of folks are not. That's just one example. You know, the discussion and debate over the Secretary of State nomination that's come into the public view is one that needs to occur. You know, Mr. Trump's a businessman, first and foremost, so he's probably looking for a disruptor for that organization to break it apart and rebuild it into something that's actually functioning well. It's the worst bureaucracy in the United States government from the perspective of what it does for America. It's got the worst reputation. And I can see why he would be looking at somebody like a Mitt Romney. That's what his skill set is to disrupt organizations and rebuild them into something that's workable. So I understand that, but a lot of folks don't understand that are very concerned that he would even be talking to a guy like Governor Mitt Romney. And I know where they're at, but I also try to remember that Trump's a businessman, and he's going to try to look for folks that are the experts in what he wants done.
Very good point. Colonel Maness, thanks so much for what you do, and thanks for having the guts to run for office. We appreciate you coming on the show. You'll be back.
Thank you, Lars. I appreciate it. God bless America.
And God bless America, and Merry Christmas to you and yours. Let's go to Jerry in Wisconsin. Hey, Jerry, are they going to have a recount in your state or what?
Well, I hope so. I hope the results are reversed and Hillary Clinton's found the winner, because it's important for the integrity of it. But it's important to stop a demagogue in office, and I hope the Electoral College does its job as the Founding Fathers envisioned, as wise statesmen, and reject Donald Trump, because that's one of the reasons we have Electoral College.
Let's start with the recount.
People like Trump.
Why would you believe that with an election victory of 27, a margin of 27,000 votes, that a recount, the last statewide recount of an election in Wisconsin, out of 1.5 million votes cast, moved the needle 300 votes? Why would you expect that this recount would produce a result greater than 27,000?
I don't expect that the results will be reversed and that Hillary will win the election here in Wisconsin.
Then what's the point of doing it?
But you don't say, well, we're not going to do it at all. One, it's because the person who taken office is not qualified as the Founding Fathers envisioned to become president.
What disqualifies him? No, hold on. What disqualifies him, Jerry?
Well, he's a demagogue. He's a vile character. He's a con artist. He's many things. And you support the Electoral College. The Electoral College was created in part to stop people like Donald Trump from becoming
president. What it was designed to do was stop the more populous states from controlling the less populous states. And Donald Trump won, 27 of the states, might have been 28. In any case, he won, and the founders of this country worried that they would end up with a situation where the most populous states would always determine the presidency, so they created the Electoral College.
They were also worried, clearly, people can just, they don't believe me, go on the internet, quotes, look up Alexander Hamilton, Electoral College quotes. Well, he was very clear he didn't want someone like him becoming president. If there's any demagogue who ever would become president, he is the very definition of it.
Give me your favorite example of Donald Trump's demagoguery that you charge him
with. Basically implying that all Mexican immigrants
are rapists. He never said all.
Yeah. He said there were a few good ones. As an offhand remark.
Well, I'm going to tell you that illegal aliens are disproportionately jailed, imprisoned, and charged with crimes against Americans. That's a concern. That's not demagoguery. That's stating facts. But, Jerry, I appreciate your phone call. I don't think you're going to get the flipped result that you said you wanted at the beginning of the call. But I guess you can always hope. Hope in one hand, spit in the other one. See which one fills up first. Back in just a moment. You've got the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Glad to be with you on a Monday. Hope you all had a wonderful Thanksgiving with your families. Let's go right to a naysayer. Luke's on the line. Hey, Luke, where do you and I disagree?
Well, there's two things, Lars. I love this show, and I've been listening to it since I was 18. I'm 23 now.
Thank you.
And a few callers ago had a very negative outlook on millennials and pot. I agree with almost everything that you say on your show, except for millennials and pot. And I'd just like to know where this bad rap came from.
Well, there's a bad rap to some extent on some millennials because they seem to want a participation trophy. Some do, you know, for everything. And participation trophies are no good. That, you know, that whole concept has ruined a lot of people who believe that, you know, that if you go out and you go to the right school and you jump through the right hoops, that everything just falls together. And there are some of us who understand, no, you got plenty of disappointments in life. Get used to losing a few rounds, you know, because you can't play if you don't win. And when you play, sometimes you're gonna lose, and sometimes you're gonna win. And the more often you play at life, at work, at anything that takes effort, the more often you're gonna win. And you know, as far as pot, I think it is a demotivational drug. Do you think so?
I don't know where this stereotype came from for marijuana, but firsthand I've experienced that a lot of people have excelled to a lot greater extent using marijuana in their life than
I don't know if anybody who's better at what they do because they use pot. I think they may be very good at what they do, but I've never met, I don't know anybody who's better at what they do because they drink alcohol. I mean,
I think a lot of it's a social thing, you know. I think that people want to believe that pot does bring them down.
I'll tell you what.
I believe that there's some
Luke,
people on the other hand that.
Luke, let's continue this one on First Amendment Friday when we've got more time. I'd be glad to debate it with you. Christina Arriaga joins us now, who's executive director of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and a member of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Liberty. Ms. Arriaga, thanks a lot for joining me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
Am I wrong to be glad that Fidel Castro is gone and that his brother should be gone from the government within the next couple of years?
No, you are not wrong to be glad. Fidel Castro incarcerated, tortured, imprisoned, and executed more people percentage-wise than Stalin did. He was a murderer and a dictator. The poor people of Cuba haven't had free elections for 55 years. So goodbye, Fidel Castro, and good riddance.
So why are there so many people working overtime to try to say nice things about him or avoid saying bad things? The president issued a statement, didn't say anything negative about Castro, the record you just mentioned, which I believe is the accurate record. And here's the president of the United States, which should be the, you know, the country that's the beacon of liberty for the whole world, that we set the example. And the president didn't seem to want to say anything bad about Castro.
Oh, it is an absolute outrage that the Obama administration said in its statement after the death of Fidel Castro that his administration had wanted to put the past behind them and focus on the future. That is an insult for the tens of thousands of political prisoners who died when Fidel Castro took over. It is an insult to every single person of faith whom he executed while they were yelling out, "Long live Christ the King." It's also an insult to the LGBTQ community. Castro incarcerated people who were, quote unquote, what he called effeminate or were suspected of being gay and sent them to labor camps. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a long history of atrocities committed against the Cuban people. And what happened was in 1977, Barbara Walters went to Cuba, interviewed Fidel Castro, and there's this romantic idea of this really king of deceit, but the man was a murderer and should be treated as such.
You know, it's funny, too, that President Obama would have that reaction, even though he must have been aware of the press reports that after President Obama visited Cuba, after the deal had been done or as the deal was being done, that immediately after he left, there were protesters who were thrown in jail for protesting while President Obama was there. And the Castro regime threw them in jail. So even his brother was continuing to carry on the same kind of activities that have characterized the Castro administration, Castro regime during all of its time. So I don't know where the president got the idea that he was trying to move forward and change the way they were doing business, because it sure didn't seem like it from the reports I read.
Oh, Fidel Castro is dead, but his secret police is still active. While Fidel Castro's body was being taken out to be cremated, Fidel Castro's secret police arrested several dissidents and several human rights activists already. Ahead of Cuba are 9 days of mourning. This is a really dangerous time for human rights activists and dissidents in Cuba. And they have tweeted out saying, we're afraid, we cannot even make eye contact on the street. We receive reports at the Beckett Fund that a la North Korea, people are being issued directions on how to look sad on the street and how to mourn. This is an unreal situation, and it is too bad that President Obama has gone on to perpetuate the idea of the romanticized Fidel Castro.
Well, that's why it's important that the Beckett Fund does the work that it does, and we appreciate your taking the time to spend some time with us, and I appreciate what you do at the Beckett Fund.
My pleasure. One last thing.
Yes, ma'am.
The United States is now deciding whether or not to send a diplomat to Castro's funeral. And what I would like to say is just consider sending the Surgeon General just to make sure Fidel Castro is really dead.
That's a great way to make the point. Ms. Arriaga, thank you so much for your time.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
That's Christina Arriaga, who's the executive director of the Beckett Fund for Religious Liberty and a member of the U.S. Commission on International Religious Liberty. And yes, I'm sure that President Obama is trying to figure out, should I go to Castro's funeral? Should I send somebody else to his funeral? She makes a great suggestion. By the way, maybe make somebody temporarily an American emissary, maybe one of the people who is exiled, you know, and had to leave that country because of Fidel Castro's actions, acting as a murderous dictator on the island nation of Cuba. Hey, if you're looking for the perfect gift, maybe for Christmas, let me tell you about Omaha Steaks and how for $49.99, you can get my family gift pack when you go to omahasteaks.com. Enter Lars in the search bar, and it's 77% off the regular price. Omaha Steaks offers unique gifts for gourmet food lovers. And let me tell you, this is fantastic. They have great steak experiences at home, the most flavorful, tender, aged beef. They have seafood, poultry, pork, veal, lamb. They've got it all at omahasteaks.com. Two filet mignons in that package, two top sirloins, two boneless pork chops, four boneless chicken breasts, four kielbasas, four burgers, a 12-ounce package of all beef meatballs, four potatoes au gratin, four caramel apple tartlets, and one package of Omaha Steak seasoning. And get four additional kielbasa sausages free. Just go to omahasteaks.com. Enter Lars in the search bar, add the family gift pack to your cart, and get a 77% savings. It's the gift guaranteed to be a hit from omahasteaks.com.
The Lars Larson Show.